He struts like John Wayne, resembles Jim Carrey, and dresses like he's visually impaired. Because he is. Insight. Insight with Mark Farrell on the Progressive Radio Network.
Ah, yes. Thursday morning, New York City with another fresh coat of snow. Well, you know, it's been two whole days without a snowstorm here, so we were long overdue. Hey, good Thursday morning. It's Mark Farrell with you. The show is Insight. Man, we have an awesome show coming your way. You're going to meet Dr. Gary Altheim. He's the executive director and director of programs for growth and development services, known as GDS. A phenomenal organization. It's been in existence for over 24 years. That's been helping inner city youth in Upper Manhattan beat the odds and create bright, self-sufficient futures. So, man, so much to talk about. Did you watch the Super Bowl? I'm sure you probably didn't. Actually, there was a lot going on. We're going to talk about the Bruce Springsteen bombshell that was dropped yesterday. We'll talk about concerts, talk about Valentine's Day, all kinds of great material. Of course, I always love your input at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Yeah, so yesterday, TMZ reported that Bruce Springsteen was arrested for a DUI, driving under the influence. And actually, he was arrested not too far from where I'm broadcasting right now out of my home studio in Freehold, New Jersey. Actually, Bruce is from Freehold, but he was in Sandy Hook. Sandy Hook is a beautiful, beautiful peninsula in New Jersey, about 45 minutes south of New York City. It's a federal park. It is absolutely gorgeous. About 8 miles of beach. There's a road going straight out. On one side is the bay. On the other side is the ocean. And it has all these kind of nooks and crannies where you can pull over, explore, hike, and drink. Sorry, I couldn't resist. It's absolutely a stunning, stunning place. It used to be a military base years back. And a lot of it is still intact, military housing. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous plot of land in New Jersey. And as a matter of fact, my wife and the kids just drove through there probably about a month ago after Christmas because it was a beautiful day. And why not go out onto the beach when it's like 15 degrees? Because that makes complete sense. But it's just awe-inspiring to drive around and see the history. And of course, the beach and the sand and everything is awesome. So I imagine that, you know, I'm speculating here that Bruce was just out there. Maybe this is after his album dropped in November because he got arrested in November. And I have a suspicion that this is something that he does a lot. Not drink. I'm talking about driving around because he's always spotted frequently driving in Monmouth County, Ocean County. And that's just the kind of guy he is. And that's great, man. I embrace that. Just a regular guy driving around, taking in the sights, the spots that he loves to sing about, think about, visit. And that's great. Herein lies the problem. When you're a superstar, when you're an everyday person, you can't be driving under the influence. No, cannot happen. No exceptions. You cannot live above the law. We learned that, of course, with number 45. Talk about the impeachment as well. That, you know, there are no exceptions. So I wonder, when the officer pulled him over, if he knew right away, or if his partner knew, did he have a partner? Did other cops pull up to the scene? And somebody was like, hey, do you know who that is? That's the boss. That's the boss, man. You pulled over Bruce Springsteen. And you wanna charge him with DUI? Did that ever go through their head? And one of the first things I have to admit to you that I thought of is that, yep, the officer that pulled him over was most likely a Republican. Most Republicans, this is a generalization, do not like Bruce Springsteen. He wrote that song about, Amadou, years back, that, you know, slammed the police, understandably, justifiably. But, I think that's the case. Believe me, he should not have been let off. You know, I don't know. In this era of COVID, the world is completely upside down, backwards, you name it. Could they have said, hey, listen, tell you what, why don't you pull over there, call yourself an Uber, lock the car, walk away, and when we see you get in a car, we're going to forget this incident ever happened. Bruce who? I don't know. I'm kind of old-fashioned like that. If he was in... So let me paint a clearer picture so you understand. So Sandy Hook, the park where Bruce was at, this time of year, you can literally walk, pull over on the side of the road, walk into the center of the road, right where the lines are, if there are even lines on the road, fall asleep for an hour, get up, get the sleepies out of your eyes, and continue with your business. Because there is no one there. So it's going to be very interesting. I know the park is typically open from sunrise to sunset. So, you know, limited hours in wintertime. But it's going to be fascinating when, you know, more details come out. Lucky for him that the court systems are in virtual mode. So he's not going to have to appear in court in a public facility, in a federal courthouse in New Jersey. I believe there are two federal courthouses, one in Newark, New Jersey, which is about 45 minutes away from here, which would be about 55 minutes away from Bruce. And the other one is in Camden, I believe. So maybe he would go to Camden, not sure. Anyway, so it's very disheartening. I'm sure no one is more heartbroken than Bruce because obviously he's got a huge G across his head, guilty. Of course, you know, he did this spot, the Super Bowl spot for Jeep / for Americana. I mean, it was such a well-produced spot. I was kind of in awe, and I was expecting this because it's very cinematic. The script writing was just spot on about how America has been divided, how we have to come together as one nation. We're on the soil of America. That is our unity. Let's meet in the middle. Or words to that effect. So it was really well done. The filming of it, the different, started in a small chapel, and it was somewhat in black and white, very distorted, and the shots of him driving a Jeep. You know, it was just like a phenomenal, what's the designer? Ralph Lauren, remember he used to have those colors ad like Americana? It was just a living, breathing version of that. And I thought it was really well done. It wasn't hitting people over the head too much. And yes, that's the printer in the background because someone else in my house is printing a document. But I'm in my studio. And of course, I'm subjected to various extraneous noises. Anyway, so I imagine that Jeep people are really PO'd, really peeved. As a matter of fact, they pulled the ad yesterday. Understandably, and I imagine second thing that came to mind is because the first thing was like, did the cops actually know it was Bruce? Second thing was like, I wonder if there's anything in the contract that would make Bruce culpable for the amount of money Jeep spent for the Super Bowl 2-minute ad. Not 60 seconds, not 90 seconds, 2 whole minutes. I need to look that up and see how much it costs. Because if you knowingly go into a situation, so this, I'm sure, was probably filmed in October, November. So it may have happened, the film, filming of the commercial may have happened before the actual spot or his DUI happened. Regardless, I think that there may be verbiage in a contract somewhere that says if you do something of defamation of character, on yourself that smears the image of Bruce Springsteen or the image of Jeep, that you could be culpable, or maybe he doesn't get paid. Maybe he didn't get paid. I don't know. I would like to think that Bruce said, yeah, I'll do it for the good of the nation. I really hope that's the case because that would make me feel, I mean, I like Bruce. Everyone thinks like, oh, Mark, you're a huge Bruce fan. No, I like his music. There's certain songs I love, but overall, on a scale of 10, 10 being like in a crazy over-the-top Bruce fan, I am a 6. I know so many other people who are just like eat, breathe, and live for this guy. And I don't eat, breathe, and live for anybody except for my wife and 2 kids. And certainly not my dog who's laying at my feet because he's a pain in my you-know-what. That's a whole nother topic. But anyway... So it's going to be interesting to see the fallout. As of yesterday, there was no response from Bruce or his team. So how does he address this? What is the impression on his kids? He's got three kids. They're adults now. The youngest one is probably 22-ish, something like that. Does he do, my friend mentioned this the other day, Wendy Crawford. She said to me, maybe he should do a MAD concert. Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. That may be too much for him to do because that may be really, really aligning himself with alcohol to a different level than what he'd want to be perceived as. I don't know. What do you think? It's not a bad idea. Maybe he could do a virtual MAD concert instead of an actual in-person when, you know, the world goes right side up. There's some credibility there. I think there's a good idea there. But he needs to come out and publicly, you know, chastise himself for doing something so preventable. The reality is, yes, hey, listen, as I mentioned, he's a little bit of a nomad. He likes to drive around, explore, talk to people, walk the boards, etc. So if you're not from New Jersey, the boards are the boardwalk. I'm sorry if I'm being condescending because sometimes when you're a different part of the country, people are like, boards? What is a board? It's the boardwalk. And so, of course, he could have pulled over anywhere, called his wife, called his son, called Uber, walked. I mean, he could have pretended he had car trouble. Anything. But I hope this doesn't put him in a downward spiral. Because we all know he has depression. Manageable, apparently. But does the alcohol act as a mask, as a coping mechanism? I've done that before to manage my anxiety, to stave off the anxiety with alcohol. And it does work temporarily. It's a short-term fix. Is it the right fix? No, absolutely not. Have I done it? Yes. Do I still do it? Occasionally. Like if I have a day where I'm really, really anxious at night, I'll definitely have a glass of wine. It just makes me feel a little bit better. If I'm not able to get a good workout in that day and I just feel my breathing become more shallow. So I just hope that, you know, he's okay. His mental health is okay. And I imagine the worst aspect of this whole situation, this whole debacle, is having this loom over him, waiting for the shoe to drop. Of course, he told his wife, I'm sure. And he and Patty are looking at each other going, okay, it's December. No one knows about it. It's January. Okay, it's still not public news. Okay, next month is the Super Bowl. Yeah, I did that ad for Jeep. When is the other shoe going to drop? Man, that's got to be a tough, tough way to live. Holy cow. Anyway, fingers crossed, man. I just hope it doesn't really just get blown out of proportion. So speaking of Bruce and concerts, man, are you jonesing for a concert? I am, man. It's been, you know, like a year and a half almost since I attended a live event. But no longer, man, because this Saturday, my son, yes, my 12-year-old son is a drummer. And yeah, am I a proud parent? Yes. Do I embellish? No, because his drumming is spot on. The kid's got major talent and chops. How do I know this? Because I'm a drummer. Has he surpassed me? Yes, he has. Does he take lessons at a great, phenomenal musical institution in Asbury Park known as Lake House? Yes. And he actually takes it. Lessons with a gentleman I went to high school with, John Liederstorff, who was on the show here probably about a year and a half ago. Phenomenal guy, great vision, great musician, professional musician. Has created just a mecca, a music mecca, for musicians that have it going on, professional musicians, recording studio, everything, and for even my 8-year-old who just started playing the guitar last week, virtually. So they have an in-person concert at, get this, you've heard of Stone Pony, of course, right? You've heard of Wonder Bar? Have you heard of Asbury Lanes? It's an incredible venue in Asbury, renovated about, maybe a year or so ago. The PA system is killer. Decoration, everything. So they have 3 days worth of music, Friday night, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday, with all the different bands, age groups, skill level, etc. And so when you belong to Lake House, you can become part of a band that they kind of build around your skill set, etc. So they have a thing called the Big Gig, and this takes place twice a year. And so this Saturday is the Big Gig, and he's playing at 9:40 in the morning. How do they do this, you ask? Well, that's a plausible question and thought. There are about, five kids in a band, and the venue's big, so there's only five families allowed in at one time, or however many family members the band has reflective of the number of band members. Does that make sense? I think so. Anyway, so it's going to be a good time. I cannot wait. He does five songs, and of course, I'm chomping at the bit to hear my man do some incredible stuff. All right, we're going to meet our incredible guest, but after our guest, we're going to be talking about the Super Bowl streaker. Yes! No, you didn't see him because they panned away from it. Two things the NFL started doing years ago was not showing fights on the field. They pan away from it right away, go to a different camera shot, so they don't support violence and anything happens on the field. Spectators or whatever jump on the field, they don't show that either, to not glamorize, popularize, validate people coming onto the field and obviously breaking the law. Right now, I want you to learn about an organization that was founded in 1996 to serve youth who face burdens regarding mental health, family instability, and violence in their communities. Dr. Gary Alfheim is known as Dr. Gary. He's the executive director and director of programs for growth and development services, known as GDS, and has been doing phenomenal work in New York City for over 24 years. Dr. Gary, a real pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
So, clinical psychologist, I mean, here's this white guy in inner city, urban area. The youth must love you because you have this great spirit. Obviously, you know what you're talking about, but most of all, you connect with youth, and that's incredible.
Yes, thank you. It's it is kind of a mystery how I have been in the middle of the inner city for the past 24 years, and sometimes it's hard to make out what I'm actually doing there.
Of course, we're still in an upside down world, and with obviously the youth you're serving, you're doing it in many, many different ways: mindfulness, meditation, yoga, stress management, exercise, all to cope with the trauma of COVID-19. And obviously, this is among everything else that you're doing. So kudos to you for obviously expanding your program. And obviously, the feedback must be good.
Yes, well, you know, thank you for having me on the show. And, you know, I think kudos to you for creating this platform. I think raising awareness about mental health is essential. And we all have mental health, and especially in the inner city, people talk about going back to the new normal. You know, there really was never a normal to begin with in our community of Northern Manhattan, Washington Heights, and Inwood. You know, unfortunately, we have a 50% high school graduation rate, a 15% college readiness, and the mental health, the numbers and the suicidality are really increasing it, you know, unheard proportions, especially with COVID. The pandemic has exacerbated
it's abysmal. These
horrible conditions. And, you know, it's really our program, as you said, is really multifaceted, because unfortunately we have to play a lot of roles that are not being played by other people. So, you know, we always say we have a whole cadre of volunteers and an amazing team that, you know, we'd rather work with one, youth correctly, then, you know, it's really quality, not quantity. There's so many issues at hand, and but there's such a great need. The need is getting greater and the resources are getting less.
Mayor de Blasio is still working with the Board of Ed in terms of trying to work things out, obviously on all the states across the country. But mental health has never been so paramount. I'm sure you've read about what's happened in Vegas, the 18 suicides, which is beyond fathomable. I mean, kids are just locked up, especially in New York City. You think about small dwellings, small one-bedroom, two-bedroom, or studio apartments where families reside. So you must be tackling issues that maybe you never even dreamt of before.
Yeah, it was remarkable when we, you know, when COVID first hit, and thank God I made it through. I had COVID in the beginning.
You did?
Yeah.
How did you fare? How tough was it for you?
It was a rough few days, but I got through it pretty quickly, thank God. And
plus, you had to. Everybody was counting on you. Dr. Gary, get up. Come on. Fight for us.
Yeah, well, we were based out of a school at that point. As you know, we were wrongfully evicted from the Fort Washington Armory, where we were based Growth and Development Services, the nonprofit, doing our mental health services for, 20 years. And then we got based out of a school in Upper Manhattan. And then
complete
we,
limbo.
Harold O'Levy School up in Inwood. And we really needed to, I felt that the youth, like you said, were getting lonely and disconnected as they were even before the pandemic. So we created a virtual program, and we really had no idea how it would go because, like you said, we never did it before. And it was remarkable the way that the youth said what they needed, and what they really needed was a connection, no pun intended. They were like, so we had 15 youth. We created a new program called Leaders for Change, where we offer mental health support. And as you said, wellness, job readiness, college readiness. And when we first got on the virtual call, we said to, we always design the program based on what they need. And we're like, I started off by saying, listen, this is your platform. This is your program. We created it for you. What do you need? And they were like, well, I'm just so grateful to see other people and talk to my peers. My dad was sick. We don't know what to do. And it was the isolation and loneliness was really unbelievable. And
it takes a toll.
Yeah, we had this program that we created, and it was it's really a great model. I think it's called Leaders for Change, and we empowered them, and they empowered each other. And we're still, our program runs all year long. So that was the kickoff to our program, and now this summer, and we continue to offer emotional support groups. We actually have one. We have one tonight, and we just really want to keep creating a sense of connection, like you said, with mental health, the depression, and the loneliness. In my experience, one of the most important things is really just something that seems so obvious, yet it's so important, is having someone that cares, having a connection. And we can still do that virtually and let people know we're here for you. And that makes all the difference with the increased suicides and the increased suicide ideation. We really need to be there for each other, sure, and not alone.
Well, Dr. Gary, inner city youth are pretty much a very, very resilient bunch, that's for sure. But I mean, resiliency is being really tested nowadays. And obviously, inner city youth are having a whole different set of circumstances thrown at them. But when you have a leadership program like you developed, and you're, including teamwork, problem solving, public speaking, identification of essential qualities and characteristics of leaderships, I mean, that's quality programming that's going to make an indelible change that they're going to learn. And they may not understand like right now why they need that, but they certainly will in a very short period.
Yes, it's true. I mean, I feel like the youth we work with are not given equal opportunities to work, learn, and grow. And mental health is one of the examples. And I know you mentioned before Mayor de Blasio. I have a strong feeling about him. I also have a strong feeling about our leaders, because to me, everything is connected. And it's about, sure, if we don't have good moral leaders, which includes the Department of Education, which includes our public officials, the youth are going to pay. And, our program is an example of that, where, what we created a movement called the Equity Movement, because the youth are speaking up on what they need. And what they need is equal opportunities, mental health services. One of the youth we work with, unfortunately, died of suicide. And, one of the issues was that, our office was shut down, and he didn't have a place to go. And our office was shut down by public officials that were not doing the right thing, for lack of a better term. And, we're not giving up that battle. And it's not just as simple as doing, mental health counseling on a one-to-one. Youth need a safe place. And as you described very well, we have created a creative program to make sure that we attack from every side. And I use that word in terms of we really need to really build resilience by helping the youth, who are really against all odds. They are resilient and they are strong. They need our support.
Now, you're a clinical psychologist, and certainly you're known as Dr. Gary in a very loving, casual atmosphere, but it's built on respect. But when you hear of a youth that died by suicide that's connected to your program, you must be completely going to full body lock and be totally in denial and all these different emotions just taking over because of things that weren't in your control. There are so many different components to mental illness. Certainly when you don't have a facility for youth to come to first and foremost, obviously with COVID, having everything virtually for the most part, it must be very, very difficult for you, but obviously must fuel you at the same time to realize the significance of your program.
Yes, this particular youth was an alumni from the program. He was like a, was really like a, one of, like a son to me, because I knew him since he was 12 years old and went to Camp Excel, which is the program's daughter's sleepaway camp. The first summer he was at camp, he almost died from an asthma attack, and I got his pump. So he says that I never say that I save anyone's life, but he says I saved his life that first time. And he's had mental health issues, and he came back to me 10 years later for support. And then he actually started working with us. He's such a great leader. I hadn't been in touch with him for a year. And then, unfortunately I heard of this, that he, died of, I say sometimes mental health issues, because it really is a disease that attacks your brain. And
sure,
he is just, it is still surreal, and we can't believe that he's not on this earth. But he was really suffering, and it's unfortunate also because of the stigma. Fortunately, his family is willing to eventually one time talk about this, because he was in an inpatient unit, and they kicked him out because of insurance. For the first time, he actually wanted to stay there. So it's just, it's hard enough to get, a lot of times when dealing with the mental health system, I have to make a decision as a clinical psychologist, is it going to be better or worse? And that's, it's really sad that, sometimes I have to decide, the hospital inpatient unit is not going to help someone. It's really a sad state of affairs.
Did you address this with the youth that are currently in GDS?
Yeah, we many of them, called me, and some of them knew him from when he was, at camp, and they were just shocked. And we had a support group. I got them on the phone. They wanted to know, what could they have done different? And I think that's, some of them, he reached out to them, and, that people don't know how to deal with it. And some of the youth have reached out, and I want to create an ongoing support group in his honor. I want to create a fund for that, for our organization, and just letting the mom and the sister recover from this a little bit more before we go forward with this. But thank God they're willing to, tell his story to help others.
Now, as a doctor, I'm sure you're kind of fielding questions from the youth in GDS about, what could we have done? How did this end, so terribly? How do you separate your emotions, obviously, from your connection, from knowing this young man? Obviously, he's probably in his late 20s, 30s.
Yeah, he's 24, 25, roughly, yeah.
Still very young. It must be very difficult to separate your feelings, obviously, on your personal relationship, obviously, as your role as a doctor to the youth that you're still serving.
Yes, well, I have my own therapy. I have my own supports, and
sure,
I do, and I think that, related to the stigma, you could look at that two different ways. I think a clinical psychologist needs to be in therapy more than anyone on an ongoing basis, or can benefit from it, whatever term you want to use. There's nothing wrong with saying it's a strength to go for help. So to answer your question, first, I know my own limits, and I actually called up a foundation that focuses on suicide. And I tried to get them come in to do a group for me and for the youth, because I know I can't facilitate a group for this young man that was, so I know number one is knowing my own limits, and two, like you said, going through the stages, and I wouldn't try to do a group to support the youth when in this position I'm not objective. I can't offer them help, but I know my limits. And, I think that's important for all of us to know, it's okay to not be okay. That's the name of the workshop we're doing tonight. And for me, I did my eulogy. I wrote a beautiful poem. I think I shared it with you confidentially. And I do my own therapy to work through this. And it's hard to make sense of. And I just try to model that, that it's for me, when I do my work, I actually have a lot of experience working with suicidal clients. And in the beginning, I stayed up at nights, and I still, people think, oh, you just forget about it. And how do you deal with all the clients? But the truth is that I never forget. I always think about my clients, but I've learned how to, you know, get experience, and I feel more comfortable about helping people because I pretty much know what I'm doing. And in the beginning, it wasn't that easy. And of course, life is unpredictable, but we don't dissociate clinical. The good psychologists don't like say, oh, well, but it's like I have my hour and I do the best that I can. And I'm really devote my, you know, all of my energy to try to help someone reach their potential. And then it's up to them. You know, people say to me, I saved their life. I said, I didn't save your life. You saved your life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You did the work. I may have, guided you down a certain area or path, but you put the time and effort in.
Yeah. You can't take that, because then you could take the other side. I could feel bad that someone, God forbid, died of suicide. This young man was not a client or even a participant for the past year before this happened. So it was not, he took a break from GDS and he was working somewhere else. And I was hoping he was doing fine, but, and we had made an agreement that, if he needs me, I'm here. I was still his mentor.
Sure.
But I hadn't heard from him. And then I saw it on Facebook. It was horrible.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you can't be all things to all people all the time. Dr. Gary Altham is my guest. He's executive director and director of programs for growth and development services, known as GDS. And he's also known as Dr. Gary. And for over 24 years, GDS has been helping inner city youth in Upper Manhattan beat the odds and create bright, self-sufficient futures. What have the numbers been like, Dr. Gary, pre-COVID and during COVID, in terms of the youth you're serving? Does it ebb and flow in terms of how many people are attending the virtual meetings? And do you find out a way, or through the web of other youth, that, so-and-so may need a phone call or may need a knock at a door?
Yeah, so we had a cohort of 15, 20 youth over this summer, but we have an ongoing mentoring program for those. We also keep in contact with all of our alumni. We do weekly events, every other week, where we invite the alumni. So we're always offering different support so that people could jump on. So we're in ongoing contact. In terms of, we're gonna have a new group of 15 to 20 youth this summer, but it's really like a ripple effect, because we really invite everyone to our community events, and it is hard sometimes to get people to show up. So, the group over the summer is, starts off strong, and then we have a mentoring program. And I really think that that's a really important component of having and that's where, if anyone's interested in volunteering or, joining, is that I think the best thing we could do right now is have all of the youth that we know, and even the adults, have mentors. I have a mentor I speak to every week, Sheila. She rocks. We all need mentors. So I think
absolutely.
On a one-to-one, have someone check in with you and get to know them. I train the mentors. It all comes from, Camp Excel. So we have an ongoing mentoring program. I mean, in the past 24 years, we've served thousands of youth. We work with the whole family. And then there's also the ripple effect, because there's youth that come to our program and then they meet another youth and they say, hey, you should learn how to self-advocate. Hey, you should, speak up on this.
And excellent.
So the ripple effect is really, the negative side of ripple effect is when there's a suicide, as you were asking, there's all these people that have no idea. There's all these other people that are affected. If this young man knew all of the people that were in the middle of the field when it was his funeral, the service we had, you never know, right? All the people that you touch. He touched so many people, and that's the ripple effect of suicide, which is, we have to support everyone that has been touched by this so that we could prevent it and we could help each other with our mental health.
There's a terrific video on your website that captures GDS's youth volunteering at a senior center that really just warmed my heart, where Many of the seniors have dementia, and you can see the youth just really connecting, and it was genuine. Of course, you were the ringleader, and your just warm demeanor just kind of set the tone, and it was just a magical piece.
Thank you. Yeah, that program is called Youth Engaging Seniors, and
love it.
But my mom, suffers from dementia, and the only thing that was really helping her was music, Frank Sinatra, and I know you have done great work with that. And I decided to see that when I saw the impact on my mom, and I also saw the way that the youth sometimes need a sense of purpose. And we combine these two really tough populations, the youth that sort of are marginalized and elders that people don't are also marginalized. And we put those both groups together and we created a magical program called Youth Engaging Seniors, which is using music going into elder centers and dementia facilities. And the youth are incredible, and it's just a magical program. Unfortunately, when COVID hit, we had to stop that mm-hmm. program, Youth Engaging Seniors. And we actually created a virtual model where wouldn't it be great if we could load up headsets and then drop them off, for people that are feeling lonely, and get them iPads, grand pads, because,
terrific.
But we really didn't have the funding to do all that virtually, but one day we hope to, get more support and,
sure.
the program go virtually so we can go back in.
So Dr. Gary, 24 years ago, you could have decided to go a different route. You could be sitting in a Park Avenue office right now, lush, cushy office, dealing with, problems that you and I can't even dream about. But you decide to go a different route because in the field that you're in, the field of medicine, the field of connecting with human beings, you decide, I need to serve a greater purpose. Was that an easy decision?
Well, I guess you've been talking to my dad. Sometimes he wonders because, our nonprofit is, struggling. It's not, you're right. I could be making $360 an hour. I had a passion since I was very young. When I was a teenager, I was really causing a little, normal problems, if you will, challenges. And I'm raising my
hand as well.
Yeah, so my parents gave me a sort of an ultimatum to go and see Vinny, who was an analyst and a social worker.
Vinny,
and my choice was to go to Vinny or to go away to military school, something like that. And I learned very early on that, sometimes an outsider going to therapy, they help my parents, they help me. Vinny helped both of us. And, from that moment on, I saw, that was one of the reasons why I got into the field. But I'm a camper. It really all started with Camp Excel because I'm a camper at heart. When I was 7 years old, my parents sent me away to sleepaway camp. They wanted to get rid of me for a couple of months. But when I came and started to work with inner city youth, when I was going through my doctorate, I was working in programs like group homes, and I couldn't believe the way that they were treating the youth. I mean, they would it was just horrible. And wow. I couldn't turn my back on, I never realized, thought of myself as an activist, but it really was from the very beginning when I was getting my doctorate and I was working in these large nonprofits that were just like, they literally would call me in and, they wouldn't, the kid would get their heads banged up against the wall if they weren't doing the homework or not give them food. And I couldn't believe it. So I actually created Growth and Development Services out of frustration because I also wanted to send inner city kids away to camp. I'm like, people need to get into a safe space. And when you get them-
And nature, especially.
Yeah, nature, safe space. And when you put them in that safe space, if you have the right supports around them, it's like mental health counseling. You could do it better on a basketball court. I'm an athlete. I played soccer in college and, camp was- I had a passion to give camp to inner city youth and to give them that opportunity. And then when I saw after camp, the need was so great in those communities all year long for mental health counseling and after school programs. And I quickly shifted Camp Excel, which existed from 1997 to 2003, which we want to bring back, to a year long program because the camp was just one small part where you create that safe space and bond and team build. And then the year-long program, I saw more of a need. So right away in 1996, I changed it to a year-long program, and the camp was 3 days or a week.
Fantastic. You know, it's a rite of passage for inner city youth to be able to get out, even if it's for 3 days, 5 days, if it's for a week, even all the better, to see what's outside their community. Yes, it's not all noise. It's not all violence. It's not all being afraid to walk to point A to point B. There's more out there in this world that, you know, when someone like yourself is like at the helm saying, you know what, it's tough right now and the world is a tough place to make it, but you know what, you have the skills. You're learning the skill sets here and you have the determination and resiliency and you can make it work. And here's a snapshot of, you know, what life is like outside your block.
Exactly. And then after that, what I found is the most important part is the ongoing support. So that's the Excel program. Mm-hmm. So, you know, GDS is the agency, but the year-long program is with the mentoring. So everything we do, which is based on a model, which I developed with my team, but it was my brainchild, called the Reach Your Potential Model. It's a model that, you know, is about individual, group, and community goals. And that started at camp, and then you'd stay in the program all year long. And it's really the same model that we do in everything we do, which is really about how do we empower ourselves and then empower each other to reach our potential. And that's our mantra, reach your potential, reach our potential. And it's really, it takes a village. And, you know,
grateful
I met you, you know, it's all about surrounding yourself with the right people. So
exactly. And they have the good fortune to see you as a model, to see someone who's a doctor. And it's also, and that actually opens the door for another discussion, because as a doctor in urban areas, there's always a myth that they can't afford medicine, which is usually the case, or an appointment or visit. They can't eat properly because good food, nutrition is not available. There's a lot of cadre of examples that we can go on. But the fact is you're chipping away at something very, very vital. Their self-confidence, their esteem, their future, their mental health is paramount.
Yeah, so as you know, a doctor in clinical psychology, so the medicine I give is psychotherapy, mm-hmm. So you're right, and I do offer that for no cost. So when we do individual counseling, group counseling, and even coaching, you know, there's all these programs out there for all other youth. Like we need to give our same opportunities to the inner city youth as we do to anyone. And you know, I always say to people, like, you know, sometimes point to the youth, and like, you know, they're resilient, they're strong. In many ways, the youth that we work with are stronger than I'll ever be. You know, I haven't been through one tenth of what they've been through, and yet they're, you know, but sometimes I say, you know, like, how would you like to play basketball with a hockey stick? You know, how would you like to have, mm-hmm. like, you know, 400 kids to one guidance counselor in the schools? And, you know, it's just not, you know, my passion has been to really, you know, to deal with things on a micro level and a macro level, which is related to, right. You know, creating equity for, you know, for the community that I work in. And, you know, that's related to the, you know, to the battle for the army that I've shared with you. That's because the youth need an equal, a place to go.
And simultaneously, they're very vulnerable.
Yeah. And, you know, it's community trauma. And community trauma is not just about the trauma of individuals, but it's really the systemic injustice, the structural racism, structural injustices and systems. And we've been dealing with that within even our own agency, where I could see the community trauma to our participants, where the leaders that are, in quotes, the leaders that were working with us have not been advocating for the youth. So I can't imagine how a youth would be feeling when their own public officials and other people that are supposed to be leaders in their community are not even supporting their well-being. And to me, that's part of community trauma.
Absolutely.
Which makes it hard for our youth.
And it makes them have trouble believing in the system, certainly.
Definitely. And it's really systemic injustice. That's why I believe it's so important to, as part of our program for Leaders for Change, is, you know, training youth on how to be public speakers and have their voice heard and really self-advocate first before they learn to advocate for others. And it sounds pretty basic, but if you haven't been given the tools, everyone's scared of public speaking, but really about, you know, having your voice heard. And some youth are not comfortable with that. And then their peers in our program, you know, really literally help speak for them until they're ready. But it's better coming from them than from me. That's for sure.
Sure. And Dr. Gary, what a pivotal time. I mean, when the national conversation, the theme, the tone about, you know, standing up, the racism conversation, I mean, what a vital time and juncture to make a change, to open the eyes of these youth and say, hey, listen, yes, there are a lot of issues going on right now, but don't be silent. Here's how we can combat this in a efficient, professional, you know, proactive manner.
Yeah, just like, you know, on the inauguration day, Amanda, you know,
she, oh my God, Gordon, like, she's amazing.
Yeah, and that's what we, you know, the youth that are in our program, when they first start off, Leaders for Change, to see the transformation from day one. We had one of our amazing youth, Jermina, who started out in her shell, and then by the end, she was doing And I Rise by Maya Angelou.
And, I love it.
You know, she's on my Facebook, and she did this, you know, to see the transformation with the proper support, have them coming out of their shell, and it's just really, it's miraculous.
Dr. Gary, how do you combat negativity? And you can't blame a lot of youth in any city, especially New York City, when they've been not been giving, obviously, maybe the best hand, so to speak, and mm-hmm. saying, you know, Dr. Gary, why should I do this? It doesn't matter. Look at the racism. Look at what's taking place. The tone from the former president, number 45. How can my actions or my voice make a difference?
Well, I think there's two parts of that. And I think it's important that first we allow a safe space for them to vent and let out their anger, because, you know, we have to let it out. I believe that, you know, we have to first sort of become accept and be aware, and then gain insight and then change. And so the first part is really creating a safe space for them to really let out what they're angry or upset about. And then the second part is really about helping them realize that, you know, you can make a difference. You can make it, mm-hmm. you can make a change and
beat the odds.
What are you in control of? And what you are in control of is, you know, your own voice and, you know, getting support. And, you know, it's really about adversity building strength. Adversity can build resilience, but you do need the correct program, and you do need the right formula for that to happen. And, you know, that's the, I think, you know, we and all the volunteers at GDS provide that formula. So it's really about glass half full. Sure. And I know I know that you're an optimist, and you yourself are a perfect example of how, you know, you turned things around in your own life. And now you're doing this show and you're giving back by showing your own strength. I know that from your story, you know, when you were young. So you're a great role model yourself. And I think that that's what we have to do. We have to be role models and be human and let them express themselves. And like you said before, sometimes coming from another culture, like as a white person, like, why, you know, that's another barrier for me. Why would they listen to me? People don't know that my other half, my wife, he is Dominican. And that's not, you know, that's not why I'm doing this. But, you know, that's another barrier to cross. So mm-hmm. I think you were alluding to it before. It's good for people from other cultures to meet people from other cultures, people from different generations. We really mash it up at GDS, all different colors, all different generations, so that people could, you know, really, and that's why camp was so great. But it's really about being a human being. We all have the same color blood, you know, we're all one race, but they need to see that, you know, when you
It's an interesting tapestry that's woven in through, especially the five boroughs of New York City, which make it really, really special. And I too, I'm in a interracial marriage. I'm visually impaired. And once in a while I say to my wife, oh my God, you're not Caucasian. When did you become Indian? I just thought you had a permanent tan. I don't know. But it's interesting because yes, youth have to have a great role model, and you're serving that as well. And I love the fact that you're Caucasian, because you're, you know, what we just underscored previously to what you just said, an example that, you know, a different representation, you know, this is what the world looks like. I mean, New York City is a melting pot, and having, I imagine, GDS alumni come back to serve and to further advocate for, yes, life is tough, but guess what? This is how I'm making it. And this is how you can make it, to prove to youth at, you know, a critical juncture in their life, like, hey, you know what? this guy's walking down the street making $5,000 a week. I'm just making the number up, selling drugs. Why should I bother going the straight and narrow? Why should I bother having an open mind and realize that the person who doesn't want to serve me at the corner luncheonette is small-minded, but I'm going to rise above. I'm going to take the high road.
And I think you bring up a very important point about the anger that is right in front of your face.
Palpable.
You know, if you just, you know, a lot of the youth we work with, you know, somehow they developed a system where they go to school like on the Upper East Side, and they're like, you know, it's just like the Upper East Side is the same public school, but the opportunities for those kids in those schools are so different. And then they're going back to a community, you know, it's right in your face. And, it's a lot to be angry about. And there's a lot, you know, about the mind-body connection and also just asthma and these mind-body illnesses that are really related to like internalizing a lot of these emotions, I believe, from a lot of the mind-body work that I've done. So it's really your whole being. And when you're dealing with all this anger, it gets internalized and it comes out in all different ways. And we have to let it out and deal with it.
When I lived in Hoboken, and this is in probably 2003, I was attacked by what witnesses said from 15 to 18 kids. And I fared well, but it was a very, very ugly and almost semi-tragic situation. They picked on me because I was a tall white guy walking through a park. And it was a UN of colors that were the victimizers. And people say to me, you know, how mad are you? How, you know, upset are you? And I said, the reality is, you know what? I was living in a town where most of the population is very affluent. And here are these inner city youth that are pushed aside, cast to the rear of this town, that have no youth facilities, no after school programs, and the list goes on and on. And I said, how else are they supposed to feel? Am I happy they attacked me? No. Do I want to hold them accountable? If there was possibly an opportunity, am I going to carry this and harbor ill manner or hate for people of different races? Absolutely not, because they're dealt certain circumstances like we all are in life. And hopefully they'll look back and say, you know what, that was wrong. We really could have injured and or murdered this guy. But the fact is that, you know, mistakes happen. The fact that they're in a pack with kids and realize that there was pressure to perform. Obviously, you know, you could have a field day with this, but the reality is they make bad decisions. But with a program like yours, GDS, we want to end those practices and show them opportunity, what you're doing for 24 years.
That's one of my, you know, one of my speech motivational speaking like you do it at camp is, or with the youth, is like one decision can change your life.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that one decision could be to, when you're standing in a corner with a bunch of people that are saying, do this, like what gives you the courage to say, I'm not doing that. And you know, that's actually part of the ripple effect that happens from our program, is the youth see another way of being. And if they are standing on the corner with 10 other youth that want to do something negative, whatever race, color, or whatever they are, you know, what does it take to say, you know what, chill, you know, we don't do it that way. Like, come on.
There are other options. So of course, GDS operates on two things, funding and volunteerism. XLGDS.org, XLEXCELGDS.org. How can people get involved, Dr. Gary?
Okay, well, they could visit the website, as you said, excelgds.org. They can email me at gds@excelgds.org. When you go to the website, there's a button that, you know, you could subscribe, and there's ways to help. You could volunteer to be a mentor. You could help us fundraise by doing a fundraiser, a virtual event. And you could join our team. You could get involved and be on the advisory council if you're interested. We're always looking for new people to join our team and to join our movement. So I really appreciate you shouting out.
And I'm sure you welcome monetary donations as well, Dr. Gary. Yeah,
that's right. That's right on the homepage of excelgds.org, how to donate here. So,
and I'll have all these links on the Insight Archive page. So if listeners are scrambling to write this down right now, don't worry, we will have that on my page. And also, there's a number, 973-914-1333, 973-914-1333. 33. Is there still an issue for GDS space as we currently speak?
Yes. First, I'll say that number is GDS's community liaison, Zadie Adams, who is a co-leader of GDS. She's awesome. So that's her number. And yes, there's still an issue with GDS's space. We're getting ready to launch a campaign to reclaim our space at the New York City Fort Washington Armory. And there's actually a petition for change, which I would be glad to share with you, that you could share that. It's change.org/reclaimarmory168. Right now, we're looking to reclaim our space for mental health services. And actually, we're looking to reclaim the entire building to be a community center that it was meant to be. This is a battle we have been fighting peacefully for 10 years, and it's really all coming to a head right now. So the Armory was meant to be a community center.
Absolutely.
And we were evicted because we blew the whistle on the wrongful use, mismanagement of the building by the city, Mayor de Blasio, and the Armory Foundation, that's a nonprofit in the building.
And Dr. Gary, with a positive outcome, what a better example of fighting back, going through the channels, and proving to youth that there are positive results possible.
Yes, we're going to reclaim the building and we're going to get back our space one way or another.
In the meantime, if there are anyone listening, listeners wise, who have any professional space that could benefit GDS, again, contact them. The website is xlgds.org. Of course, all this will be on the Insight page, but any donation of time, services, money, and space for GDS is certainly welcome from Dr. Gary. Right, Gary?
Yes, thank you so much.
Thank you for what you've been doing.
Team. I want to shout out to all the volunteers and our entire team. And of course, thank you, Mark. It's great to have this platform, and I'm definitely kudos to you for your great work and advocacy in our community for mental health and everything you do.
Gary Altheim, I mean, there's been just one example after another during this conversation, but for the 24-year span of lives you are touching and have touched, the indelible difference that you've made, you probably can never wrap your mind around that, but just know that you're changing lives one after another, month after month, year after year, and there's no possible amount of money that could ever, you know, amount to that in terms of being in a cushy, nice chair on Park Avenue, having your own practice. The satisfaction, you know, of giving back in this capacity is immeasurable.
Thank you.
It really warms my heart to know that there are so many people out there like Dr. Gary doing vital work in communities all across the country. Unsung heroes. So it's my pleasure to give them a voice and a platform right here on Insight. And by the way, if you know of anyone doing work like this or needs a voice, please let me know at mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Okay, almost out of time, but I want to address the Super Bowl. Of course, Mahomes did amazing. He did not throw any touchdown passes. That was not his fault. But the guy, his athleticism is unparalleled. Well, actually, Brady, I guess there is a parallel. That guy is a machine. But let's talk about something that hasn't been getting that much press. The streaker. Yeah, the streaker that you didn't see because the cameras pan away apparently did this whole elaborate scheme where, you know, you can bet on anything in the Super Bowl. Coin toss, uniforms, how many points, of course, cloudy day, bright day, you know, you name it. You can't make this stuff up. So apparently there was a bet made on the game if there would be a streaker or streakers or not. So guess what? The streaker made a $50K bet, allegedly, and made $375K from a $50K bet. Unbelievable. So he had it planned out where he sent his friend out first to kind of get the attention of the authorities. And then he jumped out and got more time and ran really fast and made a hell of a lot of money for it. Unbelievable. Pretty brilliant. Okay, Valentine's Day. Okay, here's my idea for Valentine's Day. Let's forget about the silly chocolates and everything for everybody else, the flowers, and let's celebrate those with the biggest hearts, our frontline workers doing everything humanly possible to save lives. And, of course, the lives that we lost. I think that should be the focus of Valentine's Day. My name is Mark Farrell. Thank you so much for my guest today, Dr. Gary, a phenomenal person doing just incredible work. GDS, check him out. Gary Knowles next. Keep living and laughing. Have a great day.
Insight with Mark Farrell. Check out this and all Insight shows on the Insight page at PRN.FM. PRN.FM. Have Mark speak at your company, your kid's school or college. Mark speaks on critical topics that affect kids and adults everywhere, from anti-bullying, mental health, drugs, and alcohol to overcoming adversity. Visit MarkFarrellMotivation.com for more info. Insight, Thursday mornings at 11 on the Progressive Radio Network.